Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Zero Point Radio Show on bbsradio.com. Standing in for Dr. Christopher Holmes is me, Dee Nicholson, and I have a couple of really interesting guests on today with some topics that I know that people are caring about and need to share. Our first guest, who's already with us, is our friend Keto, who's now out in Edmonton, digging around for information out there, like the informational archaeologist she is. And we've been just chit-chatting earlier this week about the things that she's noticing out there in oil country. Very, very interesting stuff. And then later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Joel Lord, who's the founder and the head of the vaccine resistance movement. And Joel is basically the go-to guy about anything for vaccines in this country. And there's some stuff coming out right now that is pretty nasty. I mean, there's a new vaccine that they put out that has actual spider virus in it. I mean, you're starting to fill our children full of insect parts and fetal cells and Lord knows what else. And people just go, duh, doctor says I got to give the kid a shot. So, you know, let's slam them up with whatever is the general rule of things. So, you know, we've got some interesting stuff to talk about, not the least of which is the fact that Keto, as an Aboriginal woman, as Indigenous and as immersed in that community as she is, she's got a very, very pointed perspective in terms of what our government does to the Indigenous population, especially when it comes to things like foisting medical care on them, including vaccines. So it should be an interesting show. Please stick around. For those of you who cannot stick around, the archives will be posted at the Zero Point page at bbsradio.com, and they're all free and open for everyone to download or to listen to at your leisure. So please do that if you can hang around. I know it's Saturday afternoon, and people have stuff to do. It's the summertime, you know. It's called get out and do your chores and have your fun and all that kind of stuff. And, well, you know, listen when you can. Anyways, Keto, you're there. Hi. Hi. Are we ready to, you know, shock a few people out of their shoes again?
Yeah, we might as well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's summertime, it's barefoot weather anyway, right?
Yeah, and we have to keep at our jobs of connecting the dots and putting things in the perspective of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Because the isolated viewpoint, it's correct in the information it has, but in the bigger picture, it's not taking all the information into consideration. And that's what seems to be happening a lot and what I see from where I sit, which is I'm just a grandmother who likes to know about things, and I don't claim to represent any group of people. I like to always stress that when I start talking, because I don't want to be accused of claiming to represent Indigenous people. I probably do represent some. I represent views in my family and close friends, but I'm not placing myself as a spokesperson for anyone. I just like to provoke people to do some thinking about things and to do your own research and mm-hmm. get the facts and be careful how you piece things together. Because what I see, and you know this, Dee, as being involved in journalism and media, how things are orchestrated and we're being manipulated, and we need to understand and look at even those very processes of how that's happening to us.
Oh, yeah.
Because we are.
And you know, what was interesting was I was just coming from reading an article that was put out by naturalnews.com today under the authorship of Mike Adams, who's the head of that site. And he's talking about how things are escalating towards the police state. He's listing all kinds of stuff, and he has an interactive map that he's posted on this particular page. I just sent it out to my list, but it's on naturalnews.com today.
Oh, good.
And I tell you, people need to read this because the police that we've always counted on to, you know, take care of us, to protect us, to serve us, these police are now turning into rogue thugs. And as we saw with the Boston bombing, they went around, they literally went around knocking down people's doors and kicking them out of their homes without warrants, without any right to do so, and they just came in and did it. And there's one guy who's suing, his name's Anthony Mitchell, and, you know, they busted his front door down because they wanted to use his house as a stakeout, and he said no, so they decided he was obstructing justice, and they arrested him and charged him with felonies, if you can feature. They want to use your home to come down on somebody else who may or may not be innocent, and then all of a sudden, if you say, no, I'd rather not, try my neighbor, they're going to arrest you for obstructing justice.
Well, I could say something there right on a community level as far as Indigenous experience and how we have been used to wage the occupation in our territories. And what comes to mind the quickest is the Six Nations, and in particular Mohawk people, who have really paid the price for being used by the colonial entities. And
hugely.
And when they went along with it, how they paid, and when they resisted, how they paid.
Yeah, yeah. And who got paid, and
who
by whom,
paid.
And by whom.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, I mean, I will go to my grave, no doubt, wondering exactly how it was.
Well, it's
that,
not just
two,
how it was.
Well,
it
no,
is.
I mean, how it was that I didn't finish my sentence.
Oh, sorry.
That the two officers who were involved in the Dudley George shooting, all of a sudden, just before they're going to testify, both of them die in two separate single vehicle accidents.
Yes, plus Ken Dean himself.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, when you add these things up, that whistleblowers and people who know the truth are being murdered, they're being killed, they're being marginalized, demonized. So it's getting more and more dangerous to become a whistleblower. And I think in large part, I think that one of the reasons why the U.S. is chasing Ed Snowden so hard is that they would actually kidnap the president of Bolivia because they thought Snowden might be on his plane,
right.
If you can believe that.
Yep.
They're so afraid of whistleblowers right now, they'll kill anybody who gets in their way.
Yeah, and they want everybody to know it, too.
Oh, yes, they want everybody to know it. So this whole Ed Snowden affair, while some people are saying, you know what, this couldn't possibly be right because this guy couldn't possibly get the access to the information he had without a whole lot of help from somebody a whole lot way up higher than he was. In either the CIA or the NSA, and then, you know, John Rappaport comes out and he says, well, you know, maybe it's the CIA that's jealous of NSA or wants to take NSA down. And, you know, in the meantime, really what's going on is the more of this kind of information comes out, the more they're taking the country down. You know, they're taking the country down to the path of who can you trust? Nobody. And if you want to crash the United States and blend the classes of society, the middle class and the lower class, into one big class, you take away their trust factor.
And, well, and that certainly has been done.
That has been done. Nobody trusts anything or anybody anymore.
No.
And
no,
the only thing they do, they'll go along with what the government says, because they're going along to get along, and not because they believe in it, not because they like it, but
right.
Because they really believe now that you can't fight City Hall.
Absolutely. That's what people are thinking. That's the level of cynicism. So how do you unite and bring change in the face of that?
Well, you know what? A couple of towns have found out, and they've actually acted on it. One of them most recently was Hackensack, New Jersey, which may not be a huge city, but it's certainly a city name that people are familiar with. And what Hackensack did was they decided that their city council and their municipal government was so rotten that they waited for the election time, and then
they ran a whole bunch of candidates themselves and ran every single one of them out of office. Every single one of them. So all of the people they put in office are all people from their own community who all felt the same way about what was going down. So there was, you know, an evolution of one little city because people got together and they realized what they were up against, and they realized that together they had the strength to put it down. They have the strength. We all have the strength. But we are all convinced that we don't. So really what we need to do, more importantly than actually doing the deed of getting rid of all these people, is we have to convince people that they can. And that's the hardest part.
It sure is. It's very difficult because people have been convinced that they have no power, and it's done in many, many ways, and through many different channels to where people don't even realize it's happening. Although a lot of people do realize something's happening, and then they're fighting. It's like being blind and fighting in a big spider web.
Yeah, it's sort of like that show, that Total Darkness show, where they have people who are they're on camera under the special lights that allow you to see in the dark, the green lights.
Yeah.
Right, the ultra whatever they are, but these people are put in the dark, and then they have to identify what it is that's crawling on them or nuzzling up to them or sitting next to them in a cage, and they have them with spiders and grubs and all kinds of stuff, and these people are screaming. You know, they'll run into a camel nose in a pen in the dark, and they're screaming because they don't know what it is.
Well, they're connecting with their primal fear then.
Exactly. And so things that they normally might be squeamish about but wouldn't run from become terrifying. And we're now so in the dark that we're reacting exactly the same way.
Right.
You know, we're going, a lot of people are going primal. It's overwhelming to a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
What's going on. It's so overwhelming that, people I know in the activist community they're actually giving up.
Yes, I know, and it is. It's often touch and go, and people fall. It's like falling off the wagon and then getting back on again. It's an alternating situation.
Yeah.
I find it overwhelming. There's so much to process, and a lot of it. Why bother with it? And I find it's necessary to do things to help your own mind, like relaxing things like gardening and keeping your sense of humor and, you know, hanging out with the grandchildren to get their perspective on things and stuff like that, because it is overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, and it's the young people who really need to know, because they're going to be the ones bearing the brunt of what we've left them with.
Well,
and, you know,
There
are a lot of smart ones, and I'm very, very grateful for that.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't, at this point in time, nothing is a sure thing. Nothing's guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed to us in any way, shape, or form, so we have to do what we can, share as much truth as we can, and try and get people to think critically about it. And I sent out a piece earlier today that was sent to me by a friend who I haven't seen for a while, and I was very, very grateful that he sent it. It was a piece, an article from zengardener.com, and if anyone's familiar with the Zen Gardener website, it is phenomenal. At any rate, this piece is called Subconscia, and it describes the state of being a sheeple and how you get there and what is the process of it. So please, people, you need to read this piece. It is probably the most expository piece of how people actually become that dumb that I've seen ever. And the interesting thing is, it's exactly the same in your public life as it is in your private life.
This
is exactly the process that makes us dumb in our own lives, that makes us accept crap in our own lives that we shouldn't be accepting just from other people, never mind the government.
Yes. Well, I know people are the purveyors, and
what I find very disheartening, too, is the numbers of people who are what you may call victims. They aspire to be part of the elite, and they keep on scrambling to get up there, and they don't realize that there's no room at the top.
No, there is absolutely no room at the top. And people who think, and you and I were discussing this earlier, people who think that, for example, Bill Gates, with his $500 billion, is part of the elite. He's not. He's a puppet of the elite. He's not even a quarter as rich as these guys are. And he doesn't have the bloodline. He's nouveau riche. He's a new guy, new kid on the block. And he was allowed by them to get that wealthy by use of trade policies through the World Trade Organization, not because he's such a smart guy, not because anything he had was worth anything at all, but because they were able to manipulate trade policy to his benefit. And because they've done that, what does he do? He's investing in vaccine companies, and then he goes to Africa and makes sure that these vaccines are going to sell, which drives up the price of the stock. You see, so he's a schmuck. That's all he is a schmuck.
Well, he's a schmuck in the oil industry, too, because while all the kerfuffle is going on about pipelines, everybody's focused on the pipelines, and they got them going in every direction, but he's highly involved in shipping oil by rail.
Exactly.
Him and Warren Buffett were up there a year or two ago surveying their assets, and this is what they're working on. Who cares about pipelines? The more hassle there is over pipelines, the more money those guys are going to make shipping oil by rail.
Exactly. And
so
it all plays together. Yeah, it all meshes together, and it's kind of interesting. I'll read you just a couple of sentences here from this article. It says, "Subconscia takes over its victims with a stealth greater than the most effective illness. It eventually convinces its host that right is wrong, up is down, and out is in. While the victim maintains the illusion of free decision-making, subconscia all but shuts down the host's conscious thought processes. Additionally, and most insidiously, it acts as a carrier or gateway for a host of other harmful influences." And this article provides a list. It's an extensive list. 25 points. It says, and the last point, I'll read you this one because this is exactly what we were just talking about. "By quelling their cognitive dissonance for a long enough period of time, the victim will eventually become convinced that it cannot effect change on a meaningful scale, mm-hmm. and will actually be okay with it."
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so, you know, the guy says, well, it's not a completely fully comprehensive list, but he's got 25 solid points here.
What's his name again?
This one was posted under a pseudonym. This is at the Zen Gardener site.
Oh, Zen Gardener.
Yeah, and it's Gardener without a D after the E, so it's Zengardner. There's no E-N-E-R, like Gardener. It's Gardener. And zengardener.com, it was posted by a guy whose online name is Scooter Rockets.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Never heard of him, but boy, this guy is bang on. So
that's good.
I have to thank Alfred for sending it on to me because I would have never seen it. I tell you, it really tells you what we're up against, you know. And I'm noticing, and you've been talking a lot lately about what you're seeing in Edmonton, being, you know, from Lanark County. Out here in
Algonquin territory.
Yeah, Algonquin
like
territory.
Now in Cree territory.
Now you're in Cree territory and the Plains Indians and horse country and oil country. Well, it used to be known as horse country. Now it's known as oil country.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's it.
But you've been talking about the extreme number of homeless.
Yeah, well, you know, coming from a rural setting to an urban setting, it's quite a shock to the system, and that's that's an overwhelming part of the reality. And I'm trying to put it in the context, always putting things in context with the ongoing theme of the bigger picture. And if you start with this dirty word, depopulation, which a lot of people are always saying, well, why is everything so messed up? Why do they keep doing things that actually does not help us? But if you look, if you start from that depopulation theme with an elitist group that figure there's just too many people in the world, then you can understand those sub-themes, which we're looking at today. You were talking about the vaccination thing and the homeless thing, and how they affect everybody, and how indigenous are like test groups for a lot of these things.
Yeah, big time, and they have been all the way along for this is for more than 100 years.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, they would test vaccines, they would test medication, they would even test viruses on indigenous populations without permission, without any kind of sanction, without any right to do so. They just took it upon themselves to do this.
Well, this is what was done, and, you know, they had a lot of people who were overwhelmed and stunned by the cultural shock. There was also a lot of resistance, and it's interesting how in the Indian reports that the Indian agents wrote to the head at Indian Affairs, they get very exasperated with our resistance and how we don't want to make the changes to their ways. And then also the things that they do, they keep records of the vaccination expenditures and they're going around vaccinating people who are not clothed properly and who are not able to get food and so therefore are subject to a lot of those infectious diseases that kill a lot of children. But
in the meantime, there's another prong to that, too, and that is the fact that because they've encroached on so many of the lands that are used for traditional hunting and fishing and all of that, and because of the fact that they've basically whiteified a whole bunch of people away from their natural diets and their natural way of sustaining their immune systems and their health, what you've got is a whole bunch of people who are eating nothing but overpriced junk food. And
That's what it became, and that's what it is. There was
just a thing
in the news either today or yesterday about Alberta Métis hunting and fishing rights being denied throughout the province and restricted to one small area where the government identified a community. Well, the thing is how we identify ourselves and how we live our lives, and you can never stress enough that at least half, if not way more than half, it's impossible to estimate how many indigenous people are non-status and whose families have been consistently non-status, and we've lived our lives and made our way. And
you don't have the benefits. If you're Métis, you don't really have the benefits of either side of the spectrum.
Well, this is it, and this is another aspect of those treaties that I keep bringing up my renegade viewpoint of the treaties as far as what they were. And, you know, there's a current move to, you know, this thing people talk about, we are all treaty people. But the problem with the treaties is that the British colonialists did not negotiate those treaties in good faith. And that's one of the things that makes a treaty, is that the parties to the treaty have to be acting in good faith.
Yeah, well, that's the case with any contract of any variety. Informed consent must be there. And here you are in a situation where, okay, here comes Whitey into the preserve of the indigenous people who, rather than saying, get off our land and get out of here, we're going to kill you, say, welcome, we're glad to see you, you know, nice to meet you, and, you know, you're welcome to stay as long as you follow the rules, which is non-interference and do no harm and respect the land and respect everything about it, and like that.
Well, one of our cardinal teachings is the idea of sharing. because sharing is what helps us to survive. And so when you're assaulted by another culture that has the opposite belief of hoarding for selfish reasons that are not even reasonable, it's such a cultural clash. And we were had, but we're not being had anymore. And it's a matter of regaining our voice and regaining our unity, which is, it's a difficult thing with all of what we face. So it's ongoing. It's ongoing, and it's not over. And the demographic keeps changing.
And it's getting scary right now, because as all these things are clamping down on us, one of the things I'm noticing is that there's a real push going on under the surface to try and eliminate the reserve system and put lump everybody under the one rubric, which would be citizenship. Okay, and of course, once you become a citizen, you become a slave. And if they were to abolish the reserve system, they would have to offer the indigenous benefits to replace that reserve system. What benefits are they going to get? Well, the benefit
urban
of being
housing.
On, yeah, urban housing, and not only that, urban housing that you still can't own because you're still listed on the deed as a tenant. Property that they can take from people, as opposed to reserve lands that must be left alone because otherwise it would be too obvious that the government's stealing it. You know, there's certain things they can't do out in public. So what they will do is they will lead you to a place where you'll agree to it, and then they commit their crime with your agreement.
Yeah, well, that's what's happening, and nothing has really changed because, in fact, some of the old trends are coming in more than ever, such as church-run charities. And what I'm witnessing here in Edmonton, and I'm sure it's similar in other places, and once again, I have to emphasize I'm not a expert on homelessness. I can't name names and give you all these figures, but as far as the trends that I'm seeing, what's going on here is probably an example. So what they're doing is they're trying to, there's an awful lot of homeless people, at least a couple of thousand, and I'm sure that underestimates it, given who collects that information. Because Statistics Canada does not keep any record on homeless people.
No.
They don't have those figures. So there's all these,
they say they can't.
So there's all these little groups like this Homeward Trust, which operates in Edmonton, and they do the count with volunteers. So it's dicey, but we'd say the number is just over a couple of thousand, and I think it's a lot more because I see so much of it every time
I
go out.
Let's just put that together with statistics from here in Toronto, where I am. They estimate there's about 10,000 homeless people.
Yeah,
and given the size of population of Edmonton versus Toronto, those figures would hold true. But at the same time, as they say 10,000, which is, that's a huge number of people.
It is.
You know, that'll fill a stadium, for God's sake. And these people have nowhere to sleep, nowhere to put their children at night, nowhere to cover themselves from the rain or the weather. And they are, you know, in a city, in a country like this, it's inexcusable.
It's inexcusable.
Absolutely inexcusable. And then, of course, these people are not, they're not well in the head. They're not. They can't be, because they're under such pressure and such horrible disdain coming from the rest of the population. Is that, you know, I see them on the street all the time, you know, and they're begging for money and they're begging for food. And people are saying, oh, get a job.
Yeah,
where are they going to get a job? And how are they going to get a job? They don't even have a place to wash up.
Yeah, well, this is it. And that attitude, it brings to mind a number of things. But just as far as what's going on in Edmonton and how that plays out, they want to build these housing projects. The one that just came out in the news today, a 60-unit housing project set in the suburban elite neighborhood of, Terwilliger Town, which was set up as a model community based on a 19th century village. And so this housing project is to be built right there. But it's interesting to look at the details of who and what is involved here. A couple of points. First of all, the organization that is doing this is a community organization that's church-based, and the land that they're purchasing to build this on is Anglican church land. And I found that was interesting. And
vis-a-vis the residential schools, you want to know it.
You know, because that's part of the legacy, and that's where I see same old, same old. Mm-hmm. So they're wanting build, and they're not clear if this housing is being built for focus on a specific demographic. In fact, they say it's not. But some of their rules, this is what the people who live there will be faced with. And they, and by the way, there's a 5-page article in the Edmonton Journal which gives various people a voice, you know, the usual politicians and one of the residents of Terwilliger Town. But there's no voice for these people who are going to be moving in, and they're horribly vilified in this article. So two of the rules is alcohol will be allowed. There's adults. You can't tell adults they can't drink. However, there's an 11 p.m. Time limit on your visitors.
They have a curfew on visitors?
Yeah, you have a curfew on visitors.
Yeah, and they figure that's going to fly. And how are they going to enforce that?
Well, they will have staff. I couldn't point to it right away, but it's in my notes here somewhere. And basically what they mean is there will be cameras and security guards on hand.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And there will be a social worker and support staff on hand at all times, and each client will have a social worker.
Now, oh, boy.
This, and, you know, this goes back to, I always like to look at the historical perspective. Back in the 19th century when they had this thing in Britain called poorhouses, you checked into the poorhouse at a certain time of night, and you were locked in and could not get out till a certain time in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so these were basically admit-yourself kind of jails.
Yep, and that's exactly what they're doing.
This is exactly it. So they have a rigorous process for interviewing people. They have a committee that decides who's eligible to move in here. Moving along, the biggest demographic of homeless people is single men, in their 40s, 50s, 60s. And the biggest demographic of homeless people is, of course, Indigenous people, who in Edmonton are close to half. And that is people who are identified as looking Indigenous, which, how do you determine that? What are the criteria? So, and who gets to say who's Indigenous? But say half of the homeless people in Edmonton are Indigenous people, and I don't know what the statistics are for other cities, and I don't know what percentage of those are Cree people who are in their own territory, where the oil industry is booming still, and workers come from all over the world. They come from the East Coast. They come from other countries. Actually, white folks are in a minority here as far as numbers, but it's this commercial activity.
So are Canadians. It's mostly Americans.
You know, so it's
the oil men.
The commercial activity that's going on in the amount of wealth that's being extracted from the land while people are basically internal refugees. That's another word, I think. When an Indigenous person is homeless, they're an internal refugee.
Well, essentially, if you want to put a fine point on it, I would say that phrase actually applies to just about anybody who's homeless, because they are refugees from a system that doesn't want them.
Yeah, and if they're in the place where they were born, the term applies.
Exactly. Exactly.
It seems, for me, it's just that much worse for Indigenous people because of the legacy and the bigger picture, how it fits into the bigger picture.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I've said on this show many times, when I was a kid growing up, now, basically, my parents were very kind and giving and loving people. But, you know, I grew up in Winnipeg, where the biggest Indigenous problems were evident on Portage Avenue and Main Street, and it remains that way to this day.
To this day.
To this day. And what we would see was that the natives who had moved in from the reserves to the big city had nothing to come in for. I mean, there was nobody would hire them, and they would wind up on welfare, and they would be depressed, and they would be marginalized and isolated and treated badly by general society. And back in the day, they used to get welfare. People didn't get transit passes as they do now in Toronto for specific purposes. Like, for example, you might be on welfare and going to school on student welfare. Okay, well, if you're a student and you're going to school, they will provide transit tickets. But not in Winnipeg back in those days. They gave these people cab tickets. They could take a cab anywhere. And what we would see, and this is what furthered that reputation and what furthered the attitude, what we would see is that these guys would, you know, they come into the city, they get depressed, they get down on themselves, they start to drink, something they're not used to in the reserve scenario. And so on check day, when the checks came out, you'd see them all in cabs with cases of beer. And, of course, my dad, the nice guy, would go, oh, dirty Indians. You know, somebody could at least get them a bar of soap. You know, and there they are in cabs. And he used to get very, very angry about all of this. And I'm going...
Well, this is by design.
I know it is, because who would do that if it didn't have some kind of a purpose behind it? Doesn't make any sense. And a lot of this stuff that we're seeing doesn't make any sense to us. It doesn't make sense to me to try and transport somebody out of their culture and give them no link to where they're moving to. No transition, no help, no nothing. It doesn't make any sense.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense either to me to take people off land that they're used to caring for and working and living off and move them into a city environment where they have no clue what the hell they're doing. You know,
all
it doesn't make
things,
any sense.
It doesn't make any sense because of the agenda. If you
exactly.
understand the depopulation agenda, then things start to make sense. It's,
yeah.
It still doesn't make sense, but it becomes a little clearer why some things are happening the way that they are, because
well,
a lot of times they're counterproductive, but they're making money for a small group of people, and the rest of us be damned.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the other thing is that you're seeing now that the wealth is shifting in general society as well. It's shifting very dramatically. And it seems to me that it's becoming very obvious that all of these marginalized segments of our societies are now being blended into one subclass, which is we are the animals, they are the farmers. And essentially what we've got in the overall sense is this depopulation game where they're putting all their herds together to be culled. They're labeling them all the same. They're putting them in the same kind of box. And it's really, really upsetting, like you were mentioning earlier today, that, you know, they're shoving these so-called affordable housing units. Where are they putting them? Well, they're putting them inside gated communities, practically. I mean, they're sitting them on the doorstep of people who are in the upper echelons of the middle class. These people are going for the not-in-my-backyard NIMBY syndrome. We don't want these people here.
Well, we do have to distinguish, though. As far as Edmonton, there have been a couple of communities that have successfully resisted any kind of group home, affordable housing, whatever you want to call it. And they are the doctors, lawyers, and judges who are at the top of the middle class. So the working people, like tradespeople and business people, clerks, what we would call the bourgeoisie, the petty bourgeoisie, they make good money now, and they think they own their houses, but in most cases they are owned by the bank. And so they're essentially, they are working class people who are making good money.
and they're opposing the other half of the working class people who are totally disenfranchised.
Yeah, and what they don't realize is that they may be the upper echelon of the livestock, but
yeah,
they too,
exactly.
But they too are on the list.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Be culled.
So these two groups of people are pitted against each other, and there was a quote that I had to look up to be able to cite it, and it's the I can hire half the working class to kill the other half of the working class. And that was stated by a man named Jay Gould, who was a railroad man at the time that John A. MacDonald and others were ramming railroads through here, and at a time when those number treaties were being negotiated to rob indigenous people of our land base. And this goes right straight back to the topics of the side of homelessness and ownership of your home,
mm-hmm.
and who owns your home, and
well,
how,
it ain't us.
You know, how we have we need a land base to determine our own destinies, and that was one of the key terms that I wanted to mention here today, is about self-determination and how these housing projects take that away from the people who are being housed. So it's not really a solution. And I think there's handfuls of people who are profiting out of this. I don't have all the names. I'm pretty new in town here, but there's definitely a picture that shapes up, and it's not unique to Edmonton, although it's kind of a pinnacle being this so-called boom town.
It's definitely not unique to Edmonton. I mean, if you want to take a little snapshot of the Winnipeg that I remember.
Yeah.
Okay. Interestingly enough, I ran across an article on CBC News the other night. It was talking about how a prominent Winnipeg family was discovered to have been running all kinds of tax shelters through, you know, tropical islands here and there and this and that. And the name of the family was the Lount family. Now, the Lount name mm-hmm. goes back way, way back into Winnipeg's history.
Yeah.
And the Lount, he was a developer, Mr. Lount, and he's, I mean, the original guy is still around in his 90s. And at any rate, they're operating out of an apartment building that they own that's at Portage Avenue and at the St. James Bridge in the west end of Winnipeg. My aunt lived, I mean, they showed a picture of the apartment building. I could see my aunt's apartment sitting on the ground floor of that building, and I'm going, I remember when she was dealing with the Lount family herself, because she hung out with some people who were connected, and that's how she got the apartment, was because she knew these people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now come to find out, you look at all of the, because it was Lount Construction, Lount Development, Lount this, Lount that, everything was Lount.
Yeah.
And Graham Lount was the old guy, and, you know, he was a sly one, sly boots. So, I mean, Edmonton is not the only place with stuff going on. We have it everywhere.
Yeah.
We have our crooks that have been there for a long time, generational crooks. And a lot of us we look up to the wealthy.
Oh, yeah,
only because we envy them.
We envy them.
And the stupid part of it is that if you go back into even our own religious base as Christians, what does it say? It says in the Bible that it is harder for a camel to pass through the eye of it is harder for a rich man to get into heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle.
Yes.
So what does that tell you? Well, what that tells you is there is corruption everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that corruption is essentially keeping our society in a form of thrall. Now,
yeah, it's just like a sickness.
Yeah, and of course, the hardest selling point when you're trying to get people to do their research and to look at what's going on, the sticking point is that word depopulation. That D word is just, they can't believe anybody would be like that. They can't understand how anyone would be like that. But the only way that I can analogize that to people is to say, you know what, these people think they own the whole world.
Yeah, yeah.
And they regard it as their playground, their farm, and they regard everybody in it who supplies them with profits. right, from from their companies and their businesses that we all work for a pittance.
Yep.
Okay? Well, just like the feudalist system.
Well, it hasn't really changed. Just some of the names and some of the appearances have changed, and some of the top slaves have pretty good creature comforts, and that's what fools people into thinking that they are a part of the elite, because they have a nice car, or they even maybe have a boat, you know. And,
oh, my.
And, it, what comes to mind, I'm not completely disconnected from Algonquin territory, and when I'm there and I see, I know there's a lot of poverty there. I know there's a lot of people who are working for less than $20 an hour, okay, and living in rural areas. But you see people, they're living in nice bungalows. They've got a pickup truck. They've got one or two cars. They've got a four-wheeler. They've got a boat, maybe a couple of boats. They've got all this stuff parked in their yard, and I'm scratching my head like, how can these people afford all this stuff if they're working for $20 an hour? Well, I figured it out. They don't own that stuff. The bank owns it all, and they're wage slaves for life.
That's right. They're now the American people, as well as the Canadian people, are now saddled with debt created by the banks and their own government that can never, ever be repaid.
No.
And what's really interesting is that when people ask Albert Einstein, what is the most evil thing on the planet? Without a moment's hesitation, he said compound interest. Now, you got to ask yourself, and this is, again, back to that sticking point over that word depopulation.
Yeah.
People are going, oh, well, other people couldn't be like that. Surely they're human beings, and they share the planet with us, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, now, hang on, people, because what you have to understand is that these guys are like farmers. Now, let's say that you're in an area with limited land, call it Earth, okay, because they ain't making no more land, right? So you're in this limited place, and you have it overstocked with cows, and there's nowhere to sell your cows because there's no more land to put them on.
Mm.
What do you do with them?
Well, I'm sorry, folks, but it's kind of like the dead dog cafe. You got to kill them and sell them cheap.
That's exactly what they're doing to us. Right?
Sell them
Isn't
cheap.
It? Isn't
yep.
it? That's what they're doing. And when you realize that these people, and then you go, well, wait a minute, how could anybody be that cold? Well, it's real easy when that's what you've been raised in.
Yeah.
And you're talking about in 250 years, at 20 years per generation, do you think they've not done their own convincing?
Mm-hmm.
On their own kids are even involved in these pedophile rings and all of the perversions that go with being super rich these days. We see the perversions on TV with entertainers.
Well, it's the power, the absolute power that corrupts, and it's a trap.
Oh,
but,
of course it is.
And they got a lot of dirty tricks, and I was intrigued by some things you were saying earlier. What you're saying is reminding me about the Indian Trust Fund, and some of my recent activities have brought to my attention this thing called the public trustee who controls the assets of people who for some reason can't handle their own affairs.
Then
let me just finish. Then this thing that's administering these housing projects, what is it? It's a trust. It's called Homeward Trust. And you were shedding some light on what these trusts are about, and I sort of want to reverse interview you.
Yeah, no problem.
To what insight you have on that and how that is part of the ripoff that's going on.
Well, here's the thing. I'll use Conrad Black as an example.
Oh, good one.
Okay. Now, Conrad Black, as we all know, got arrested for all this fraud and blah, 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 and how he took all kinds of money he wasn't entitled to, and yada, yada, yada. And, of course, they nail him, and they're going through his assets to find out exactly what they can take from him, you know, either in fines or in recompense or whatever. And what do they find?
Oh, God.
he's got squat. Conrad Black is broke. Okay, and people go, wait a minute, how can he be broke? He's a multi-gazillionaire. How could he be broke? Well, he's broke the same way they all are, because none of them own anything. They put things into a trust, and a trust is untouchable.
Why is that?
Well, a trust is untouchable because you don't own it. So if they're coming after you personally and you don't own it, they can't touch it. It's the same thing as if you have a joint bank account with another person. You owe money, but the other person can't. They can't touch that bank account because they don't know whose money is whose. You see? So what they do with a trust is they basically put all of their holdings into a trust, and they pay some schmuck to administer it and to dole out money and benefits as needed from the trust, right? But they don't own it.
So does the trust, is it like a corporation, and what is its liability?
The trust doesn't have any liability. It's like a holding tank for money. And
so
for
in
property.
In other words, this, I want to clarify this, because the Indian Trust Fund, which is trillions of dollars, when the government of Canada goes tits up, the Indian Trust Fund cannot be touched?
Can't be touched.
Can't be touched. So all those Brits and aristocrats and elitists who have a share in that, who have access to that, they still get the wealth that was stolen from our people here.
Exactly.
And kept in the Indian Trust Fund.
Exactly, because, you see, it's all a trust is all about who administers it.
So
you cannot administer your own trust. You have to have somebody else administer it for you. That's why it's a tax benefit, and that's why it's safe, because you don't control it. You hire some fool to control it for you, and you get him to write you a check. You call him up or you write him a letter. You say, I need $50,000. Oh, okay. Here you go. And that's his job. He basically administers the trust. So if there's trillions of dollars invested in an indigenous trust via treaties, that trust, who's administering it? That's where it'll stay. That's where it'll stay. With whoever is administering it. Now, if that administration leads all those goodies to be distributed to a whole bunch of people who shouldn't have it in the first place, that's what'll happen, and that's how it happens. So once you put everything you own into a family trust, for example, and I know there's a lot of people who are dealing with some of these opportunities that have come out, and some of them are bogus and some of them aren't, and sometimes we don't know which are which, but as an example, the people who invested, for example, in the Iraqi dinar, okay, they're being advised that if Iraq revalues its currency, which it's going to have to now because they just came out of Chapter 7 bankruptcy after a 15-0 Security Council vote at the UN, they're now out of bankruptcy, and that means they have to have a tradable currency. So if they revalue their currency to, you know, where it was roughly before the U.S. invaded, there's going to be a lot of instant millionaires. Well, what are these people being advised to do? They're being advised, pay your taxes, get the government off your back for your capital gains, if any, right? Because some people will have enough and they'll invest it and there won't be capital gains there.
Right.
But the thing is that they're telling you, put it into a trust, so that they can't take any more of it.
Right.
You know, go spend it on stuff they can't touch. Spend it on stuff they can't touch, because property, they can devalue in terms of the monetary value of it, but it's still the land.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Paper money, they can devalue and it becomes just paper.
Yep. Well, we've seen that happen in recorded history.
So there's, you know, the people who are watching that stuff with a hawk. Like a hawk, because it's very, very important that people understand, you know, it's very nice if they've got, you know, 100 grand in the bank. Wouldn't it be nice if we all did? But the thing is that if the dollar value of that 100 grand goes down to next to nothing, you've got 100 grand worth of nothing.
Oh, yes.
And that's instant. Poof,
it's
there
instant.
It goes. And then you've got the bail-in rules, the new bail-in rules, where if the banks, which are supposedly, ha-ha, too big to fail, and which are busy all the time feeding their own faces on our money and ripping us off for more, these banks, basically, they're untouchable. They are untouchable. They're too big to fail, and now if they are come even close to failing, what do? With the bail-in, it is the depositors' money they take.
Yes, you're saying that. Well, this Indian
Well, we've already got
fund.
The legislation. The legislation is there. They just put it in place. Thank you very much, Flaherty, Mr. Jim Flaherty, our beloved finance minister, who I'd like to poke in the nose with my fist because he's such a cretin. I mean, excuse me, but you cannot tell people that you're going to take their hard-earned and already taxed money out of the bank and not expect some kind of fallout. Well, look what happened in Cyprus. You know, that's what they did in Cyprus. And they're ready.
They did do that.
And of course, because of the fact that we've given up our sovereignty in banking, and that was Harper gave it away in 2010 at the G20, never told anybody about it or what was happening until it was a fait accompli, right?
Well,
As a fait accompli, we get this presented to us. Guess what? You got the legislation too. And people went, what? And then they got distracted by other stuff. I don't know, maybe Kim Kardashian having her baby or something. I don't know.
Well, this is the thing, and this is what I'm just thinking about, is the media role in things. And looking at a picture here of Aboriginal Affairs Minister Bernie Valcourt and an article that came out on the Canadian press. And so he's speaking about... He thinks that there's more consensus amongst First Nations than confrontation, and more consensus with federal policies than confrontation, which is a complete bold-faced lie. They've got their puppets in there who nod and say they agree, but the struggle over assimilation continues, and a lot of people say it's a done deal, but there's always some resistance. And what it boils down to is that self-determination thing and that fear and panic that people everywhere feel because their lives are based on a dependency towards the system, which they know is corrupt and which they feel is rotting and falling apart, as opposed to having any self-determination to get your own food and make your own shelter and not have to work for someone, buy it from someone, get a loan from the bank and all that kind of stuff that totally takes away people's personal power. And you were talking about that earlier on, and it really boils down to the same thing. And that's the importance of the Indigenous way of life and why the land is so important, because it's about a relationship with the land that is free and direct and that is not based on a system.
Exactly. The land provides its own system.
Yes, it does, and that's the natural system. We're not living with that. We've got people are against each other. We're locking our houses. You know, where I live in a city where if you are fortunate enough to live in a house, as I am at the present time, if I want to go in my backyard, I have to make sure the front door is locked. I have to make sure the garage door is locked. I'm not used to living like that, and sometimes I forget. But I'm seeing plenty of evidence that I should be concerned if I don't want my stuff to be burgled, and God forbid anything any worse than that. I was out riding bicycle the other day, which is my good thing happening in Edmonton, is bicycle paths, and it's flat rather than hilly where I'm from. So the old lady's out bicycling, and I didn't buy the bike. I don't know what it costs. It's a pretty nice bike, not super expensive. And I saw these two scruffy-looking guys early one morning when I was out riding. And I look at everyone, and I'll say hello to anyone because I want to connect with their humanity. So I see these two guys, and I look at the younger one, and I'm ready to say hi. And he goes, nice bike you got there. And then I look at the other guy, and these are not two guys that are out having fun
And these mm-hmm. are not two working guys like you might see the teacher or the social worker rides his bike to work because he wants to save on gas, save the environment. These are not sports people. These are predatory people who, as was explained to me afterwards, they ride around on old bikes and they're looking for nice bikes. And if you leave your nice bike outside somewhere, they're going to exchange it for the crappy bike they're riding, and then they can go and sell your bike.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a really super bike to get swiped either, because that happened to me just a few years ago.
And how do you feel, you know, because your transportation is so basic to your...
I was devastated. I was devastated. I didn't have the money to take transit. I mean, they bumped up all the transit fares in Toronto where it's to the point where it's cheaper, literally cheaper to take your car downtown if you have one than it is to take TTC. And, you know, there I am, and I got my bicycle, and that's what gets me to my grocery shopping and to visit my friends and to do what I need to do. And I parked it in front. Now, get a load of this. I parked it in front of the bank. I had gone into the bank for like 2-3 minutes.
In front of the bank?
In front of the bank, yep, uh-huh. First suspect was the bank, but then I realized the bike was paid off, so they couldn't touch it. But at any rate, I locked it. I locked it. I had one of those great big, you know, heavy U-shaped locks with a bar on the end, the ones that you're technically supposed to be able to open with a Bic pen, but, you know... Still, the thing, when I came out, there's a lock lying on the ground, locked, okay, and the bike's gone. And I'm going, well, how the hell did they do that? Well, somebody pulled the Bic trick on my lock. And I was in the bank no more than 2 minutes because I just used the Interact machine and came right out.
So that goes back to the trust thing. How can you function in a society where your little bit of transportation, it can be stolen when you go out? It's like, it creates a bad feeling.
How can you function when you can't trust anything?
This is what I mean.
You know, you can't trust the government. You can't trust the police.
And you can't trust each other.
You can't trust each other. You can't trust your neighbors. You don't even know your ding-blasted neighbors.
You know,
we're so disconnected that we're so alone that we're that afraid that we're immobilized.
This is exactly it. You're a poet. The other thing that I see, I also am fortunate enough to have a camera and I'm taking pictures. And I'm doing a whole series on what I call the guard dog signs, because I drive up and down, ride the bicycle up and down back alleys and stuff, and all you see every few houses is guard dog on duty, beware of dog, and all
uh-huh.
this kind of stuff. So these are people who are living in fear. That's the point. They're living in fear, and they don't know who their neighbors are, and they're barricaded. You got all these privacy fences that are almost 6 feet tall, and you can't see into their yards. But not everybody lives like that. Other people live, and they've got beautiful gardens that are open, and you can go by, and you can smell their roses, see their vegetables growing, and so it's a struggle. And
yeah. Well, I'm
it's,
lucky enough to live in a neighborhood that's like that.
Yeah,
you know, where everybody knows everybody, and you know, it's like they pass by. Oh, your garden's looking nice, and yeah, how's yours coming along? And you know, this kind of thing. And we have, you know, interest and sharing of things between neighbors because we know each other.
Okay, so there, where Edmonton is an extreme. Because you have a very mobile population of people here
from
various places to make a living, and they don't know each other. Right on this little street where I am, we've got some people who are direct from Africa, two or three families direct from China, some people across the road from Russia, and a lot of people are from Ontario and Newfoundland. So very few people have their roots here, and that is part of the problem because we don't know our neighbors. And
yeah, and you know what? It used to be that would be the case for a street party.
Yeah, well, they try. They are trying. There are people who are trying to do community stuff, but the roots are shallow, and it's very difficult, and there's quite a bit of snobbishness, a lot of different demographic of people, and it's hard to bring people together who are so different.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, one thing we need is a, you know, real good power failure. That brings them together real quick.
Oh, don't speak too soon. You know, Calgary's recovering.
Yeah, I know. Calgary's recovering, and now they're finding E. coli everywhere. What a surprise.
Oh, poop everywhere.
What a surprise. Well, yeah, there's poop everywhere, yeah. It's sort of like what happened in Toronto when the Pope showed up. Came from world. You remember that? You remember reading that in the news?
No.
Pope John Paul shows up to hold World Youth Day.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
At Downsview Airport, like up there. And right next to the airport is a big store with very luxurious and expensive top-of-the-line furniture called Idomo. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, across the street from Idomo was where they put all the portalettes.
Oh, God.
And don't you know all these real good God-fearing Catholic kids, what did they do? Well, they plugged up all the piping from the portalettes because they had so many people. They had like a million people there.
Oh.
And so in order to make sure that the portalettes didn't overflow, they had them all piped together and being siphoned, right?
Oh, God.
Well, the only problem was these good little Catholic kids from all over the world were having so much sex and using so many condoms in the toilets that they jammed the system up. And as the system jammed up, hardy har har har, Idomo across the street gets flooded with 6 inches of sewage.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. World
the
Youth
irony.
Day. There you go. The irony of it was, well, we always said the Catholic Church was full of crap, didn't we?
Yes, we sure did. And they're all
go.
Those condoms, eh?
Yeah.
But I'm getting curious now about your other guests there, because
yeah, I was just going to mention we're just passing the hour and we need to bring Joel in because he has lots to say as well. And so I hope our boys on the board are listening and that you make that phone call and bring our second guest in real quick, because we'd certainly like to hear Joel's viewpoint on this. He's got a lot to say, especially about depopulation, because vaccines is a major method.
Well, that's a good, I'm glad, because I don't have a lot of data to contribute, except that I have been vilified for opposing vaccination. If you recall, with the H1N1 scare,
mm-hmm.
our communities in the north were viciously targeted, and when I opposed this and spoke out against it, I got some pretty nasty emails from people who were accusing me of trying to kill our people, and it's actually quite the opposite. So I look forward to what Joel has to say.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, I am dependent on the boys on the board to bring the man in. So hopefully that will happen shortly.
Oh, so we should just keep on yapping?
Yeah, we just keep on yapping until they tell me that it's he's all set up, and then he'll be joining us, and that should be good.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you as a intelligent woman. Who's aware of what's going on in the world, and I'm still hopeful that you put a bunch of intelligent grandmothers together, and we will figure it out.
Yeah, well, most of us tend to be grandmothers by the time we figure it out, don't we? Now
well,
we're
that's
two,
part of
two
it, eh?
Smart grandmothers, both feeling smart, and that leads itself to that old tongue twister. You remember that old one?
Say it.
Oh, God, I'm afraid to. One smart fellow, he felt smart. Two smart fellows, they both felt smart. Three smart fellows, they all felt smart. And of course, if you try and say that fast, you wind up saying that they smelt fart.
Which
and
is just fun.
I can't do it unless I do it slowly.
Okay.
I just can't, because I get so caught up in the joke that I do it despite myself. However, now I've got a beep on my line. I'll bet you it's Joel. So talk about something for a second while I see what's going on.
Well, vaccination, that's a tough one.
It is Joel. Yes, it is Joel. 1 second.
BBS Radio.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge, bringing humanity closer.
Now we're back, and we have Joel Lord with us from the Vaccine Resistance Movement. We had a little difficulty getting that act together, but we're here now, and Joel is with us. Welcome, Joel, and thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Dee. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. Now, I was mentioning at the top of the show that essentially you are the go-to guy in Canada when it comes to information on vaccine, and you and I have a rather long history going back to the false flag flu epidemic, so-called pandemic, a few years ago. And you were just forming the vaccine resistance movement at that time. It's since become quite the going concern. And you recently held a symposium in Vancouver that caused a whole bunch of flap with a whole bunch of people who didn't want the truth getting out of vaccines. And I know you're doing a DVD about that, so you know, before this show closes, I want you to make sure that people will know when and where to go look for that information on that DVD so that it can all get shared properly. This is, as I understand it, you were mentioning it was the DVD of footage from the big event that you held with Dr. Chris Shaw.
Yeah, you know, this is first of all, yeah, Dr. Shaw wasn't actually able to attend this one, even though we certainly tried to get him on board for the big vaccine summit we held in March, but we were not able to gather sufficient footage from that event due to some sort of major technical difficulties at the time. But this is actually a carry-on with the same parents of vaccine-injured children that we had on board for the summit.
Yeah.
Came together with us once again in a more intimate setting, and we were able to put all that work up there, and they had detailed PowerPoint presentations, each of them.
Awesome.
We allowed them to really expand their talk and their experiences, and they went further in depth than they were able to before. So this really is a remarkable document, and I'm very excited about this. I actually had my own detailed PowerPoint presentation over an hour long, in which I go in delving deep into the autism report I released last year. I also do a firm breakdown and analysis of the essentially the composition of a baby's brain, and why we're seeing all this neurological damage and neurodevelopmental difficulties, disorders such as autism exploding exponentially now, right?
Yeah, and not only that, of course, they're expanding as they go. They're even expanding the definition of the word autism to include all kinds of conditions. And now it's autism spectrum disorder, so meaning it's a spectrum of conditions. And, you know, people still persist in calling it a disease. It's not it's a condition, and it's caused by something. It's always caused by something. I'm pretty sure that vaccines are not the only cause vis-a-vis all the other toxins that we are exposed to on a daily basis, but boy, they sure are the prime suspect in a lot of stuff.
Absolutely. Well, they're now trying to cut children with Asperger's out of the official definition, sort of textbook definition of autism spectrum disorders. And so that's a really big part of it, because obviously a lot of these children who don't succumb to the more advanced forms of autism, there is the lesser degrees of Asperger's, ADD, attention deficit disorder, and attention hyper deficit activity disorder. They are closely aligned and closely related in many ways in terms of the symptomology in these children. So again, yeah, you're right. It really is it's a classic deceptive move on the part of the vaccine industry to really deflect attention away from the real statistics, which is now conservatively 1 in 50 children with autism, and that number is as high as 1 in 38 in a major study that was done in the South Korean community. Hundreds of thousands of children in that community in the United States and overseas. That's going to actually become a universal model pretty soon when we're able to catch up with it. And, of course, autism is 1 in 4 in boys to girls. So that actually translates to approximately 1 in 30 children with autism that we're now seeing, right?
Yeah, so, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that is a startling statistic, and
yeah,
really speaks for itself.
Especially when you look at the fact that only a few short years ago, that figure was 1 in 1,000.
Right.
Right? So in a matter of a couple of decades, it has gone from 1 in 1,000 to 1 in anywhere from 30 to 38 kids. So that just gives you an example of, and of course, as we see those numbers rising, we see a concurrent increase in the number of mandated vaccines. Our kids in Canada now have to, province to province, because each one has different rules, but our kids are mandated to have like 30 shots by the time they're 5 years old. And
exactly.
You're slamming
anywhere from 25 to 30 injections conservatively.
Yeah.
You know, what I've really tried to do is the kind of proper detective work that I think has been missing in a lot of cases. And I think, well, of course, as you delve into this work and go deeper down this rabbit hole, you begin to realize a lot of the glaring omissions in the education system. These doctors are not equipped with the knowledge of synergistic toxicity, for instance. They're completely in the dark on what occurs in a baby's brain and central nervous system, and the corresponding the relationship between injecting multiple neurotoxins and these excipients into the bloodstream of a baby, and of course, bypassing all the natural defenses. that the body is equipped for, right? Because of course 80% of what we encounter in the environment, viral, bacterial, or fungal pathogens enter the body through the mucosal membrane, right?
Yeah, and hang on to your hat.
Or the gastrointestinal tract of the gut. So
and exactly, and then you add in GMOs.
With it going behind the barriers that,
yeah,
that
and,
are,
and I gotta,
you know, you're not
I gotta
supposed
bring
this to, up. You know, go in through that entrance. It's like it's a hostile takeover of the body.
Yeah, not only
and
that,
so,
but
you
people...
know, particularly when you look at these babies, you know, I think the big telltale sign is the lack of proper development of the three areas, the myelin sheath, the blood-brain barrier, and the meninges, but particularly the myelin sheath, which is the insulator of nerve cells in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the crucial area that is underdeveloped. And a baby enters the world, the myelin sheath undergoes continuous formation well after birth, from 3 months to 1 year after birth, and extends well into the teenage years. So, you know, all those early shots, when you look at the detective, any sound detective would say, well, when is autism occurring? Right, early onset autism coincides precisely with the most intense period of standard immunization, right?
Exactly.
Right at the juncture of 12 to 15 months. That's rush hour in the human body in terms of Western immunization protocols, right?
Uh-huh.
And it falls smack dab on the line with the introduction of the MMR series. But of course, it's not just the MMR series, right? It's the PCV, the pneumococcal conjugate. It's the Hep B shot. It's the whole litany of shots. Not only that, but if these children are exposed to prescription antibiotics, right? If they're exposed to any other litany of toxins that the industry is trying to push, whether it's post-vaccination, say the child comes down with convulsions, well, what do? They give the child anti-convulsion medication, which triggers further you know, neurological breakdown, and it's a domino effect, right, that leads to this extraordinary chasm of autism that is the you know, where the rug is pulled out at that time, and everything goes right. I call it the sinkhole effect, because as autism ensues, these kids are losing not only their mitochondrial capacity and their methylation, that's the viability of cells and the efficacy of cells in the body, which is related to everything. So that's the metabolism, the immune system, the capacity to harness trace minerals and antioxidants. Everything goes right.
Uh-huh.
And
then on
all
top
the
of
vital,
that,
minerals
and
antioxidants literally go right out of the system, right?
Yeah,
and everything
and then
manifests in this, you know, in this rooted, gets rooted in the gut. So, all these disorders that all these gut problems are just a byproduct of the domino effect, right?
Yes, and it's important to note too that genetically modified foods, and it is estimated that North Americans eat their own weight in genetically modified foods every year.
Right.
What the glyphosate does in the Roundup-influenced GMOs, and a lot of that is soy and corn and all of that that we eat
right
continually all the time. What do they do? Well, they produce a condition called leaky gut syndrome. What is
exactly
leaky gut syndrome? That is where the barrier between all of the bacteria and viruses and detritus and toxins and everything being cleansed from the body through the excretory system filters back into the body wherever it happens to be thanks to the GMOs. Now, you add that to vaccines, and you add that to pharmaceutical medications, and you add that to non-nutritive food, and you add that to synthetic vitamins and minerals that the body can't process, and what you've got is you've got a money farm for the medical cartel.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you've got depopulation.
And these children are being baited as a, are becoming a breeding ground for these laboratory-produced viruses. So these literally these weaponized viruses, right? Because in virtually every instance, I mean, I've gone through all these shots and I know what's in them, and but I also know the synergistic properties of these shots, the combinations of ingredients, and why they're so deadly. And in virtually every instance, when you're dealing with a virus in these shots, they're naturally occurring virus that one would see in nature. It's a chemically synthesized form of the virus.
It's cultured, yes.
So it's already genetically modified in a laboratory. And, you know, and of course, I mean, they knew all this stuff decades ago, Dee. I mean, you know all this, but the what's shocking to me is just how, you know, I mean, I found a report from 1961 wherein they laid out all primary monkey kidney may contain one or more latent viruses whose characteristic cytopathology becomes evident when such tissues are cultured in vitro. That means when they're vivisected or chemically synthesized in a laboratory.
In a petri dish,
and they
dish,
knew
yeah.
that. And that is the case with all these, in all these instances, right? Even the any type of, you know, when they talk about an inactivated virus in a shot, well, how do they inactivate a virus, right? Supposedly inactivate it. They flood it with detergents, formaldehyde, different types of nasty toxins like methylene blue you know, there's a whole cat's cradle of these toxins that they use to supposedly weaken the virus, you know, and because, you know, they'd like to claim that they just try and heat treat it or expose it to UV saturation. But it's a complete lie, right, to suggest that any of these viruses are inert when they enter the bloodstream. They're not inert, right? They're more potent than they were when they were naturally occurring in nature.
Yeah,
they chemically modified.
And
so
they
you're actually
guarantee.
Looking at literally a weaponized hybrid virus.
Yes,
that,
and speaking
that
of
is
which,
going into the child's bloodstream, right?
Speaking of which, our friend Phil Seagrave from down in North Carolina has been putting out a lot of information over the last year, particularly about nanovaccines, because now not only are these elements that you're speaking of right this moment, not only are these deadly and devastating to the human physicality, but now they're creating these things that are called nanovaccines, and they have particles in them that are so small that they cross the blood-brain barrier, but in addition, they cross through all tissue. They become embedded in tissue, and they can't be removed.
Yeah,
I mean, there's certain processes that can certainly reduce them, and you know, taking organic sulfur, for example, to cleanse and detoxify, that works, and a whole lot of other stuff actually helps an awful lot. But you're talking about elements here being put into babies and young children, never mind the adults who can take charge of their own lives and make up their own minds, do they want to kill themselves with vaccines or not. But these babies are innocents who have no control, and parents who are ignorant and make these contracts with government to say, okay, you can shoot up my kid, but they're not being given information so that they can properly give consent. And now, this week, I don't know if you saw this or not, but there's some idiot down in the States, a congressman, who came out and said that parents who do not vaccinate their children should be held liable for the deaths of other children who get sick from the disease that they refuse to vaccinate against. And I'm going, well, that would be interesting in a court of law, because how are you going to prove the germ that killed that kid came from this kid?
Right.
How are you going to prove it? It's
right.
not.
Oh God.
It's not
yeah.
even physically provable.
Well,
but
even,
some idiots
even based
on try
their own
it.
Criteria, what herd immunity stands for, it's a complete contradiction in terms, right?
Of course it is.
For them to suggest that. You know, that an unvaccinated, individual would somehow become a threat to those who have supposedly inoculated themselves against an incoming viral threat.
Exactly.
It's completely ludicrous.
I mean, my first point is, wait a minute, don't the vaccines work? Because if somebody unvaccinated is a threat, then why are you taking
right.
the shot? Because, obviously, you're taking the shot to prevent anything from being a threat, and
right.
yet you turn around and they say, oh, well, now you're a threat.
Right.
And not only that, you should be liable for any
yeah.
How can you cause damage if what they're saying works? You know, where do they get the idea that they can just reverse logic in the middle of that? That's why I sent out that piece earlier today called Subconscia, because what it does is it shows you how people get literally reversed in their thinking, and they think that in is out and up is down and right is wrong and evil is good and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And,
right.
And,
I wrote about this recently, and I actually included a portion in the last presentation I gave at this follow-up to the summit, wherein I said natural immunity is designed to take on and withstand any incoming infections which threaten your survival. The body can only do this when it is naturally, gradually exposed to disease and infectious agents lurking in the environment. We have been convinced into believing a mistaken ideology, because immunization is an antithetical approach which runs counter to nature, that of combating or shielding yourself off from the environment by injecting toxins into deep muscle tissue or subcutaneously artificially shocking or jump-starting the body into recognizing external threats, rather than holistically embracing, right, all that we come in contact with, thereby reinforcing through harmony the inherent properties of natural immunity, right? I mean, try to tell that to, your local pediatrician, and, he'd throw you out of his office.
Yeah, well, they do that. And in fact, what I'm hearing from people out here is, I told my doctor I didn't want my kid vaccinated, and he told me, well, then I can no longer have you as patients.
Right.
And, of course, what people don't realize is, well, a lot of doctors kind of scratch their heads about this vaccination thing anyway, but they all go along with it, so why do they? Well, this is called a little issue called standards of practice. SOP stands for, in the public's mind, is standard operating procedures, and it pretty much means the same thing, because their methods, their standards of practice, are dictated by medical associations, who are dictated to by who? The same people who are running the whole cartel. So these doctors are forced by their own medical model, they are forced to comply. And if they do not comply, they can lose their license. So these guys, they may be questioning the vaccine system. They might be questioning the value and efficacy of a lot of stuff that they're asked to do under standards of practice, right? But the thing is, if they dare to object, they will not have a practice to be standardized in.
Right.
Right. So
and this,
it becomes a survival
issue. Cuts to the quick of the mainstream media as well. I was in the middle of a huge media firestorm in the lead up to our big event.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
The big summit we put on here in Vancouver, and I did a whole series of interviews from all the major media outlets. There was even CBC National News had a piece on us out of Toronto. And in every single instance, they were using the same talking points. And I didn't see a single journalist with any courage to
address any of these questions outside of the talking points they had been given. And I found it really disheartening to see that. I expected them to go after me like wolves, and that's what they did, wolves to the kill. But, you know, for me, it was really just a case of standing back and just, you know, calmly, firmly deflecting all their nonsense. But even the local supposedly liberal-minded journalist here in Vancouver, who will remain nameless at this point, spoke to me subsequently after having done a big story on me. On the vaccine resistance movement and the my whole philosophy and approach to all this work, we spoke for upwards of an hour, a detailed interview. He only included maybe 2 to 5% of our conversation. He told me later over the phone that he had been muzzled by his editors, and that he said, "I want you to know that that you're up against some very powerful forces here," and he said, I can't go into it any further, but I just want you to know that I was not able to write the story I wanted to. So there you have it, right? So the public is being misinformed on so many levels here, but even when we do try and get the truth out, we're isolated. We're herded into a corner and made to look like a so-called fringe group, but yet they themselves are trying to set the ground rules so that we are supposedly a fringe, when all they're doing is cutting off the conduit to the public, right? And I mean, the kind of work that we're doing should be mainstream, and yet it's being brandished and labeled as fringe by them, not by us, right?
Yeah, well, what's really interesting, Joel, is that I'm hearing statistics now coming out of North American media, and they're saying that a very small percentage, it's less than 30% of Americans now, get their news from mainstream news.
Sure.
So it's kind of getting interesting, because I'm wondering, if that is the statistic, then how come more people don't know more? And I think that there's people need to be aware that there are levels within the media of alternative and controlled opposition. And you see some of these websites that are really, they've always been very reliable and very solid news sites, and now you see them kind of saying some stuff that you don't quite agree with, and they're being bought out by other websites who you know you don't agree with. So there is an attack on the alternative media, which is the only place you're going to get the truth. It's the only place. Any reporter out there who tells the truth now loses their job and can't even sue over it.
Exactly. And there, you know, time and time again, I came up against journalists who were it was literally like talking to a child about these subjects. And they kept stopping me and asking for a definition and this and that. And they had no, they didn't even have a rudiment of research behind them. And here they are doing a supposedly an important interview, and yet, they weren't even interested in making the connections and dealing with the real science.
Yeah,
and then they had the audacity to try and suggest that the work that I was doing or others, lacked any scientific credibility. And, even though, I proved, time and time again that they're simply ignoring the science.
That's
because
right.
Because they haven't done any research.
Well, you know,
and
I read
they're not willing to put these important topics up for. I don't even think it's a debate. I mean, I really, I love it how the industry really likes to try and paint this as a as a one-sided argument, right? I constantly got. I mean, one of the headlines on one of the stories that they, one of the hit pieces, what was it? A controversial vaccine summit tries to reopen settled debate.
Yeah, that was the CBC, wasn't it?
Right. Talk about that's such an Orwellian headline.
And
it was so classic, and I thought, Mike, you know, I mean, I give up on these people, because, you know, as much as I am concerned that they're sending out confusing messages to the public, still, you know, I realize, you know, you can't fight these people. You know, you really have to just expose their naivete and their complicity in this cover-up, and just move on and deal with it. Because all I'm dealing with is the science. That's all I care about. Because the science actually speaks for itself, right?
Well, the truth always does. This is the thing. The truth always speaks for itself. You never need to fight.
And, you know, and it's always amazing to me how these great, I mean, all my heroes are the ones, are really the, you know, the neuroscientists like Dr. Christopher Shaw and Lucija Tomljanovic and others, Dr. Obolchanek, who was featured at our conference, who's one of the world's leading immunologists, who was trained, weaned on mainstream dogma out of the Rockefeller University and Harvard. I mean, she was one of the bright lights in the industry, and she immediately, you know, she came out of it and gradually came to her senses, and she rounded a corner at some point, and everything shattered. All the lies. She realized it was a completely fraudulent, you know, tapestry of lies that she had been fed, and that what she spoke of, which I found so important, she talked about how the whole concept of immunization is based on this theory or this. The limited subset of immunology, okay, which is the science of vaccines, right? And what she said to me was amazing. She said how the medical industry definition for the immune system is based on its applications to vaccine science. So it has nothing. All their definitions and what they learn about immunity is based on immunity as it pertains to vaccine uptake in the body. So it's a completely rigged book that these kids are getting right from day one in medical school.
Well, and it's,
I mean,
also
Rockefeller's for that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to look in the general sense too. In order to back up what you're saying, we have to recognize the fact that, for example, in the psychiatric community, okay, if you look at the DSM-4, which is the gold standard of practice and diagnosis for the psychiatric community, and you realize they haven't got a single diagnostic test to apply any one of the bogus labels that they use. But every one of the bogus labels that they use on an individual is an excuse for what? Medication.
Yeah.
So every time you turn around, what you're really getting is you're getting another reason to pay pharma some money.
Yeah.
It's all about another reason to pay pharma some money. And then, to back that up, you go and look at the Georgia Guidestones and all of the protocols and everything, and Agenda 21 and the depopulation. And before we lose keto, because we're, you know, pushing towards 6 o'clock here now, I want to make sure that she has a chance to comment, because coming out of the indigenous community, where, as you know, Joel, a lot of experimentation was done with vaccines on native kids, and the indigenous people never had a word to say about it, were never given the opportunity to know what was going on. So Keto, you know, you want to jump in here. I know it's hard because Joel just keeps going because he knows so much. But, you know, pop in here and, you know, remind us.
Well,
remind us what was done.
Remind you what was done. It's not just what was done, but it's what is still being done.
And to summarize, what comes to my mind is the whole thing of assimilation, because I'm thinking of a community and a family that I know, and I don't have to name them, where one of the daughters got a good education and became a doctor. And this is a really great thing to have in our communities, is someone who can speak the language and relate to our issues and try and practice medicine, you know, in a culturally sensitive way, because the person is from this culture. But the argument that I had with a woman who I worked with a number of years ago was over vaccine. And I was trying to promote the viewpoint that vaccination is not a good thing. And she got very upset and was citing her daughter as an example. So there's her daughter, who is an indigenous woman who became a doctor, and she's practicing medicine in her own community, and she's highly promoting vaccine. And the argument that was given to me, which is very specific, is that those of us who are strong, meaning those of us who don't die from these diseases, we have to go along with vaccination for the sake of the weaker. And this is a really cruel psychological argument that is being used on our people and in that way. And that's really about all I have to say, because Joel has had a lot to say and a lot more expertise on the topic.
Yeah, and could probably use another hour to get it all out.
yeah, and I could
but,
do the,
you know,
the related things, you know.
Yeah, well, one of these days, as I was mentioning earlier, Joel, I would love to have you participate in this show as well, is I would love to have Phil Seagrave and Eileen Daneman from the National Vaccine Information Center and yourself on with Phil Seagrave, and, you know, talk about all the nasty stuff that is in these things, because between the three of you, you would offer such a perspective on what's being done. And last year, I don't know if you will recall, but last year I was saying to people that, you know, we used to have the right to bear arms, as in B-E-A-R. Now we have the right to bear arms, as in B-A-R-E. And what and what I was saying was that all it would take to get the population to bear their arms and take a shot with any number of toxins, any kind of agenda they wanted, including depopulation, which is not something, I mean, come on, I know people don't want to accept that word. I know it's a nasty word. I know it's hard to get past, but you know what? Take a brief look at Agenda 21 and tell me it's not in play. But the thing is that it's the depopulation agenda that we really need to pay attention to, because, like it or not, it's there. Believe it or not, it's there. And every little piece that we can beat out of that agenda is another maybe decade that we can survive in relative safety, but it's getting worse and worse and worse, and people are just swallowing all of this information. It's being watered down, fed to us, sugared up with all kinds of this and that. They're using fear tactics, and all it would take to get us all to do it is the threat of a new virus. And son of a gun, didn't they earlier this year come out with a super virus that's got a 50% kill rate coming out of Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, when you look at the, how to approach this from the standpoint of detective work, I think all you need really look no further is the, who are the target groups, right, in all these vaccine programs? And you look at the tetanus shot inoculation series that was launched in the 90s, and who were the target groups, right? It was predominantly young women, these indigenous populations, where they were forced to, what was it? Women were average ages of 15 to 45.
No, it was 12 to 49, darling.
It was from 12 to 49 years
old.
Yeah,
12 to 49. Now, it was tetanus was the shot. It was given for free to female population between the age of 12 and 49, which are the childbearing years.
Childbearing years.
Okay.
And again, target group. It was women. It was young women.
Yeah, in
right? And
Mexico.
Of course, you match that up with the Rockefeller Foundation-funded project.
Oh, yeah, but wait.
Doing this kind of research on limiting of fertility into the early 20th century.
Exactly, Joel.
All the early eugenics work, the work in Germany. That leading up to World War II was getting its the pipeline of funding was coming from the Rockefellers.
In
the United States, right?
Yeah.
The Wilhelm Institute was a hotbed for a lot of this research and a lot of the ghastly experimentation that was going on in Germany. But they were also doing it in the United States, and the Rockefellers were funding and fueling this research. A lot of the early research into a virus-bacterium hybrid, which again, I mean, I've made a lot of connecting the dots and showing how the 2009 false flag pandemic, which clearly it was stemmed from a lot of the early research that the Rockefellers were doing in 43 and 44 and in the 50s and into the 60s. And then you had the annual report the Rockefeller annual report the population program. And in 1968, they came out with an annual review that I'll just a snippet from it. They said research is principally in the fields of human biology, reproductive physiology, immunology, and molecular biology, and its basic purpose is to discover efficient, safe, and low-cost methods for the control of fertility. Right.
And that in the meantime,
led right into the launching of the tetanus shot series, the smallpox and Hep B programs that were released in the United States, in New York, San Francisco,
yep.
Over in Africa.
Yeah,
Bulletin 47 from the World Health Organization, which was commissioned by Henry Kissinger, that called for the developing of a T cell disruptor to target the immune system.
In the aggregate, Joel, we've got as recently as the 90s, we've got this one confirmed operation that hit women in Nicaragua, the Philippines, Mexico, Tanzania, and
right.
That was the tetanus program. And inserted into that tetanus vaccine was bovine gonadotrophic hormone. And that particular hormone causes women to become allergic to their own fetuses.
Right.
And spontaneously abort. Well, they reduced the population growth in those nations by 25% with that
right.
experiment. Now, on top of that, okay, we're looking at the facts are now out, and it's proven and it's generally accepted as scientific fact that right now the sperm count of North American males is down 50% from 50 years ago, and this is all during the time that they've been using all these methodologies. And then there was another report. Get a load of this one, people. There's a new method of male contraception. You know what it is? Ultrasound. The
right.
same ultrasound that we routinely routinely administer to fetuses, and apparently a good shot of ultrasound on the testicles will render a man sterile for up to 6 months. Now, how many ultrasounds are each of our fetuses exposed to, and what kind of damage is that doing? We don't even know.
And by the way, they're now trying to entice young boys or young teens to teenage boys to get the HPV vaccine Gardasil, right?
Exactly. At the same time,
you're going to see. You're going to see a whole shockwave and ripple effect of damage in the body that is, I think, going to lead down the same path that you're talking about.
Exactly. I mean, there is nothing more fearful out there to me than medical intervention in my life, because it is the easiest one to implement. It's the easiest one to force on you. They can call you crazy and medicate you against your will, and every one of your neighbors would say, oh, well, it's too bad about her.
Yeah.
She went nuts. No surprise. She was into all that conspiracy theory stuff. Maybe the tinfoil hat got to her. Well, geez, I mean, I'm sitting here and going, I've been screaming about this stuff for years and years and years, and I keep telling people the same thing. I'm going to repeat one more time, and then I want you to repeat your website for people, because we're right getting close to the hour here, just a few minutes away. But the bottom line is, you don't have to believe what we're saying, people, but for God's sake, if you care about who you are and who your children are going to be and your grandchildren are going to be and what kind of quality of life they're going to have, for God's sake, get off your ass and do some research. Because if you don't, I've got no sympathy left for you. If you can't take that simple responsibility, you need a slap upside the head, and a real good one, too, and maybe another one to go with it on the other side of your brain. You know, because at this point in time, if we do not get our act together as thinking human beings, we are just continually moving down the chute to the slaughter, and every time they prod us, we go, yes, sir, we'll move a little faster, sir, thank you. You know, so we have to stop thanking these people for killing us. We have to stop going along with what they're doing, and we have to pay attention to the whistleblowers and the naysayers out there who have done the research, have gotten off their asses, have done the work, like yourself and like Keto and like a lot of the guests that we have on here, and myself and Dr. Holmes and, you know, everybody else. And it's like, you have to recognize one simple thing. The elite do not alter their views to fit the facts. They alter the facts to fit their views.
Go, Grandma, go.
Yeah, go, Grandma, go. We are all now...
Amen to that. I'll just add to that. Just trust in your natural immunity.
Oh,
and,
I
think that's very hard for people to understand at first, but once you really undergo that paradigm shift in consciousness away from dependency on outside forces and on this fraudulent leviathan of lies that is Western allopathic medicine, you come back to a very simple truism, which is that natural immunity is all you need to sustain your viability throughout this lifetime, right? But you have to avoid the landmines, and you have to support what natural immunity we have left, right?
Exactly, and boost it every way you can. Fresh food, even if you can't afford organic, wash it well and eat conventional. But for God's sake, eat fresh food, eat fresh fruit, fresh vegetables whenever possible. Try and get as many nutrients into you as you can. And at that, even beyond that, you have to keep your stress level down. You have to learn to think critically so you can manage the stress, because nothing will kill you faster than stress. It will deplete everything in your body and just wipe out your immune system in one fell swoop. And it's all in your head, people. So you need to get a grip on who you are and the power that you have. We all have great power within us. you want to learn more about what kind of powers you can take, then you subscribe to the Eagle Watch. Listen to Keto. Listen to people like Joel. Join the vaccine resistance movement. And your website is vaccineresistancemovement.org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And
so,
we will be releasing this wonderful new DVD in the coming weeks. And there will be information posted on that up on the homepage. So just visit the website and stay tuned. And I will be offering it at as low a rate as possible to anyone who supplies a mailing address. We will we'll be sure to try and get a copy out to you.
Awesome. Awesome. We need to get all this information out. There's piles of information we need to get out. We're doing everything we can to get it out. We need all the help we can get from those of you who have hands to pass things forward with. Please join in. If you're not an activist these days, you are a victim. Now, in closing the show, I want to thank very, very kindly our guest, Keto, who is a grandmother that I love to bits, and has all the information that you could possibly want to know about what's really going on in the indigenous communities. And she may say she doesn't represent anybody, but I think she represents a truth, and that's more important than representing a single soul on the earth. And as far as Joel is concerned, man, you work your butt off. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, both of you. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with more. Because there's lots more where that came from, people. Thanks, BBSRadio.com. Thank you, everyone. And goodbye and good luck and God bless to everybody for another 2 weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.